You've stopped in at the Guidepost, brought to you by the American Saltwater Guides Association. Stock up on gear, grab a coffee at the counter, and get ready to hear incredible fish stories from the best captains on the East Coast and thought-provoking conversations with stakeholders and policymakers working to protect these fisheries. This podcast is presented by Costa Sunglasses.
Hey everyone, the podcast you're about to listen to is a recording from a guest speaker at our last Fishery Science Symposium that we hosted in New Orleans, Louisiana last month. We hosted our third Fishery Science Symposium with the goal of further unifying the angling community, fostering productive discussion, and inspiring stewardship across sectors. Our science symposiums foster a collaborative learning environment for industry leaders that includes guides, anglers, brand representatives, small business owners, media scientists, state representatives, you name it. If you're a stakeholder in the fishing and outdoor industry, you have a place in these conversations. Our fall 2024 event was the first of its kind for the Louisiana angling community, and it was largely a great success. So we appreciate everyone who came out, but these events are intended to be a multimedia event. So you can access a full library of presentation coverage on the ASGA YouTube. You can see those videos. You can also obviously listen to them all as individual podcast episodes. We had a great lineup of speakers. Dr. Marcus Dryman, a fisheries ecologist at the Mississippi State University, stopped by to talk about Jack Crevalle and a proactive approach for an underappreciated fishery. We also had Chris Shibley and Jason Adrians from LDWF check in to talk about the latest on redfish in Louisiana and the LA Creel program. Ben Meadows, who is an economist and professor at the University of Alabama, Birmingham, stopped by give a pretty engaging presentation about the untold economic impacts of redfish in Louisiana. And then Lu Yen Cho from the Got One app, as many of you know, stopped by to talk about how apps and artificial intelligence are changing the game for fisheries. So be sure to check out each speaker from the lineup. And without further ado, enjoy a digital check-in to the third ASGA Fishery Science Symposium.
Thanks, Tony. Yeah. So, afternoon, everybody. Thanks. It's really great to be here. And maybe just I can sort of provide personal testimony what Tony was talking about before. I've fished all around the world. I'm an obsessed fly angler, mostly saltwater, but I fish freshwater everywhere as well. And I spent years, probably two, three decades, fishing redfish in the Florida Gulf, Southwest Florida, around Matt Lachey and Pine Island Sound and all those great waters. And I stopped fishing there because the fish have disappeared. The red fishing is terrible there now. It's a shadow of what used to be. And so I was so thrilled to hear about what these folks were doing here. And I came in the spring and got my butt kicked by your sheep's head. Thank you very much. And had a great time with all the guides down here. And just as Tony said, the incredible hospitality. But I really felt what Tony was saying, which is, you know, I left one fishery to come and spend my money here because of the fishery that you have. And I hope you understand how magical what it is you have. And I've fished everywhere. It's really an incredible fishery. So I spend more of my time. I live up on the east end of Long Island in the legendary waters around Montauk, New York. So I fish for striped bass and tuna, false albacore, giant ocean-going bluefish. But in my career, I'm an educator. But specifically, I'm an educational technologist. So I was the first teacher in New York City. This will tell you how old I am, to have an internet email address. And the reason I know that is because I wired our building, our school building, to the internet by hand, because there was no school that was wired to the internet. So I've had a long relationship with technology, and I never really thought about putting it together with my passion for fishing. But like many of you who are obsessed fishermen, I spent decades, you know, trying in my head to figure out how to capture data and answer the fundamental questions about what works in fishing. And like many of you probably, I started by keeping it on a stenographic pad, you know, and you know, paper and pencil and salt water don't go very well together. And so by the time I got home, I couldn't read anything that was on there. I couldn't turn it into data. And several years ago, I just started to think to myself, this is ridiculous. Why are we doing this? You know, you have this thing here. Can't you just record everything you need, you know, with a phone? And I never built an app because I figured someone else would do it. And instead, the only apps I've, you know, that came out are things that really end up being spot burning tools or, you know, social media substitutes, but for your phone, which was not what I was looking for. I was looking for a tool so I could get better at my fishing through data. So I ended up building the app myself, and this is really just a labor of love. In fact, I was telling folks here that this is a family operation. My daughter's an artist, so she drew the icon and the logo. Her roommate is an artist, so all of the fish illustrations, which we're now auctioning off at raffles because everyone loves them so much, those were drawn by her. So it's really, and I did a lot of the coding myself and all the design work. I have another obsessed angler up in the Northeast who retired as a software developer, and he's been working for free on it. But our vision is really very simple. It's just we want to do two things, and we think that these things actually go together in a really symbiotic way. We want to help anglers like you and like me become better at our craft through data-driven insights. And one of the things that really like always drove me crazy was I'd go, you know, at the marina, come in, and it was a good day or a bad day of fishing, and you have the exact same argument every single time, right? It's like, well, it wasn't so good because it's a full moon. Striped bass don't like the full moon. And the other guys are like, no. They love the full moon. It's a new moon that they don't like. No, it's the first 3 days before. And I'm like, this is data driven. We should be able to know the answers to this stuff if we just collect the data. So that was one of the things I wanted to do, was just be able to get better at what I did and have more fun by actually harvesting the data. But we saw an incredible opportunity to aggregate that data and to share it with science and research and management to help protect the fisheries that we love also, but in a way that didn't compromise our, you know, fishermen are very, very secretive about what they do for a good reason. We were talking about birding apps, and you know the difference with birding is it's not competitive. 10 people can see the same bird, and there's no ramification. But if 10 people know that there are redfish in one small spot, you know, you obviously ruin the fishing. So we had to be very careful about how we created this relationship. So what is Got One? And you can all download it if you go to the App Store or Google Play. It's available for Android and iPhone. It's free. It allows anglers to tool, gives them a tool to log catches through a few clicks. You can also use a voice command, or you can upload a photo, and I'll show you that in a minute, but that has unlocked a huge opportunity, because you can even go, because your photos, unless you turn off all location services in it, but your photos all have metadata in it that has a time, the date, and the location of the photo. I've gone back and loaded all those photos from 10 years ago, and all of the data has captured out of it. So I'll show you that in a minute. Contribute to fishery science and management efforts, and take angler data privacy seriously. And so, you know, we really thrilled to be working with the folks at LDWF, and it's great to hear about what Jason and Chris and others are doing with things like La Creole. And this is not in any way meant to be competitive or substitute for efforts at like La Creole, but you know, when we look at that issue around refusal and lack of participation in survey efforts and data collection efforts, I think the key to it, and this is what we know from other consumer apps, is there has to be a benefit, a value back to the participant to participate. That's not just abstract. You know, let's help the future of fisheries. It has to have a really immediate impact for you, right? If you think about why you use Facebook, you're giving away all your private information to Facebook, which then is selling it to their real customers. But you do it because you get a real value out of connecting with your friends and so on. We will never sell your data to, you know, huge companies that will, you know, have in the way that Meta or Facebook does, but we will give the data in aggregate form to scientists and researchers, and that's, I think that quid pro quo is really key to designing good consumer apps. So Tony and all the folks at ASGA have been incredible supporters and really encouraged us from day one. Nature Conservancy has been a big supporter. And then, you know, as Tony was saying, we have lots of folks from industry are really, really excited about this sort of convergence of data and fisheries management science. So Hatch has been a big supporter. They sponsored our photo capability specifically to support work with LDWF. Hoagie Lure is a huge supporter. I'll talk more about our collaboration with them momentarily. So this is our first full season with the app. While it's early days, we have now just about to surpass 3,000 registered users of the app, fishermen, who have contributed over 15,000 logs of fish. And we started with four species. We're at 26 species. The most common email I get every day is from an angler, a user of Got One, who says, can you add ... croaker, fill in the blank, right? And so we've just had this incredibly aggressive adoption curve, which has been super exciting to see. And this is a little map. I'll show you a little more detailed map of where our catches are. A lot of it is up in the Northeast because that's where we started, but as you can see, it's really expanding around Florida and into the Gulf. And you know, what we're so excited about and what makes it fun for me personally is we've just gotten great support and endorsements from the top guides and the top folks in the industry. Blaine and Bailey, who are here, have been huge supporters and advocates and super excited. Mike Hogan from Hoagie Lures is a partner and is all in. If you go to Salty Cape, which is a great YouTube channel on fishing, on light tackle fishing, mostly in the Northeast, but what applies to everything you do as well. He concludes every video now with showing how he logs his catch using Got One, which is really cool for us. And then research partnerships. So we're working with the Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries. As I mentioned, we've started working with LDWF, with ASMFC, with folks at Woods Hole Striped Bass Magic, which is a University of Chicago group. And then I'm on the board of the Global Fish AI Consortium. Who knew there was a Global Fish AI Consortium? But there you go. I'll tell you a little bit more about what we're doing around AI and these this sort of application as well. So I'll demo a little bit of this for you. But so from an angler, from their photo, or just by tapping or using voice, all you need to do is really indicate the species and the length of the fish. Right? So the location, date, time is all picked up by the photo or by the phone. And then from that, it's able to pull water temperature, tide, current, wind direction, wind speed, moon phase, moon fraction, you name it, all the environmental factors, which, you know, I used to write dutifully down on a piece of paper, those are pulled from sensors, buoys, whatever the best sources are that we can get. We pull from over 100 different sources to get that data. You don't have to worry about it. It just does it automatically. And then on the back end, this is creating real-time logs in a NoSQL Firebase database. And then we can provide that on an export basis, as we do with folks at LDWF, on a weekly basis, daily basis, monthly basis. So they're getting real-time feeds on this cache data. Now, what's interesting is we abstract the location data, so we lop off the decimal places of the long lat. So everything is abstracted to multiple tens of mile increments, so your specific fishing spot is not being identified. And actually, all the researchers we work with, they always said to us, if we can get data within 50 mile increments or by a state, we're happy, right? So actually, there's real.
Tell them about the three regions. So LDWF is in, you know, in east central west region for Louisiana, and the data that Loops app is providing to LDWF is honing down that, so they don't care where you caught it, they just care what region.
Yeah, I'll show that in a sec. You can select the basin. If you're submitting data specifically for LDWF's usage, so just a quick demo of kind of what it looks like. So here's the app. You fire it up, and there's a big glowing button. You can just tap that to log a fish, or you can take a picture through the app, or you can upload a photo. So here we'll upload a photo. It gives you your photo library. Here's a big striped bass I caught in the spring, right? So all I have to do here is the species and the length, and that's being automated by AI now, but I'm just going to show you this for now, right? And that's it. It's going out and pulling all of the relevant environmental data based on those three clicks, right? And there you go. And as I scroll down, it'll show where I caught it. Only I see that data, right? And I can obscure that for anyone else. And there's all the environmental data. You can change it. So if I say, that's not where I caught it or when. So now I'm going to modify the time and the date. And I can move the pin to a different location. What it'll do is, so let's say I caught it up here in the Long Island Sound instead. It will now go back to all of those sensor data, and it will correct all the environmental data as well. right? So there you go. That's now the updated version of the fish. We added a skunk, by the way. That's our latest species. That's our most popular species, certainly the one I record the most. And here's all of that data, right? And because this was a striped bass, you actually have access up here, and we have a partnership with Massachusetts DMF. There's a striper study tab there. And if you tap on that, they are interested in landing time and release time and hook configurations. And I'll explain why in a minute. But this has driven some really interesting groundbreaking research that's being published right now this fall. So people actually indicate like the swimmability and the blood level of a released fish. And remember, this is why I asked about discard data, right? One of the hardest things for managers to actually really record reliably is discard data. If you release the fish, most people don't, there's very little data about that fish. So for instance, with NOAA, where we're doing studies on bluefish now, they told us that if we had 50 recorded bluefish discards in a year, that was like a grand slam home run. We have like 5,000 from last year, you know? So the amount of data that they can now get from anglers is enormous because of that. So that's an example of how the app functions. And then I want to talk about sort of the aggregate insights, because this is, again, the benefit back to the angler. When I used to do, you know, state surveys for striped bass through New York City, DC, and I'd, you know, do fin clippings and recordings, and I put scale samples in an envelope, and I'd send it off. I never got anything back. I felt like I was doing something, you know, out of the goodness of my heart and as a participant in the fishing community, but I never got any insights back. So we commit to sending the aggregated data and the insights back to anglers. So this was the almanac we did at the end of last year, which was our beta year, that shows number of fish caught by species, species caught by month. This actually shows exactly what I was talking about, the distribution of caught fish in the app by moon phase. Something I've always wanted to know. Well, we have the data now. Distribution of fish length for striped bass. This is really interesting to me. So two of the big striped bass hotspots in the Northeast are Raritan Bay, which is at the base, really at the confluence of the Raritan River and the Hudson River, and north of the Chesapeake River. It's really the staging ground for a lot of our migratory fish. And then they come out to the eastern end of Long Island as they migrate up north. Well, it turns out, and I fish both of these waters, it turns out that the optimal temperature to catch water temperature, catch striped bass, at least for our recorded fish, is 10 degrees colder in Raritan Bay than it is up in Montauk, which makes total sense because it's at a different stage in the migration. But I'd never seen the data behind it before. So this is 1 year's worth of data. Here's fish length versus water temperature. So, and by the way, all of these reports are generated out of AI. So I literally have a custom ChatGPT engine that's connected to that database. And if you want any report, I just tell it what I want, and it generates that on the fly for me. So this is catch data, so I wanted to show you real quick. Sorry, I just turned off my computer. It's not what I wanted to do. Come back. Sorry. OK. So hold on. This is. Let me show you this. All right, so this is a live view. Now, I've randomized the exact location of the fish, so it's not giving away the details, but you can see the different colors are different species, right? You can see the lots of blue up here in the Northeast. Those are mostly striped bass, right? But, you know, if we zoom down here, you can see that, you know, increasing number of fish in your necks of the wood. I'm going to actually filter this here just for redfish. Right, so we have since the beginning of the year when we started working with guides here and with LDWF, we have about 200 redfish recordings within Louisiana, and then we have another about 550 in the rest of mostly Texas, Alabama, Florida, and then up along in the Carolinas and so forth. So that's live data, just to show you what that looks like. So science partnerships. What we can do that's so cool now is we can actually create a geofence around a particular area. So this is your waters here in Louisiana, and then this is the coastal habitat of redfish along the Atlantic seaboard, right? And so today now, if you catch a redfish within this bounding box, this one, you will get a survey from LDWF. And it'll say, would you like to participate? And you don't. It's optional whether you do or you don't. If you catch a redfish within these coastal waters along the Atlantic seaboard, it'll pop up a similar one, but for the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. And actually, we work with both organizations to make sure the data that we're looking for, that we're collecting, is aligned. So over time, these agencies can actually start to collaborate and work together on that data. This is the one that we do in Louisiana. So you'll see, as Tony was referring to, there's data here that we don't normally collect. So there are additional fields, disposition of catch, sex of known, mode, method, and then the basin fished. So you can select from the basin, which was the level of resolution that our partners at LDWF were interested in. So we're really looking, I guess, if there's a one main takeaway for all of you here in Louisiana who fish these waters, please use the app. The more you use it, the more data you're collecting on behalf of all of us to really understand what's going on in this fishery. And it again, not a substitute for what the folks at LDWF are doing with LA Creole and so forth. It's just another way to collect this data. And then this is the actual live redfish data that we've collected. And you can see we're starting to run trend analyses on our own about what's going on, and we'll share that with our partners in the near future. But it is an incredibly immediate feedback loop. It's obviously very different from a highly rigorous survey instrument. We're not striving for scientific accuracy with every data point we get. This is really the law of big numbers, right? This is the way the worlds that I work, right? So you collect a lot of data, and even if the accuracy of every point isn't as high as if you're doing a small sample survey, if you run a regression line through it, you end up getting much, much more accurate data over time, or insights over time. And that's really the approach we take. It's more of a tech approach to data, but I think these things collaborate nicely. So this is incredibly exciting what is the impact of this kind of research collaboration already having, right? And this is, I come from the tech world where things go very, very fast and we innovate really fast. So it's really fun to see how we can apply that same mentality of innovation and that spirit of speed in the fisheries world. So this is a collaboration that emerged from the work we did with ASGA and Massachusetts on this the striped bass release survey. So what these folks were interested in Massachusetts was there was a lot of controversy over catch and release handling of striped bass. And a lot of the take captains were saying, may sound familiar to some of you, that catch and release mortality was much higher than was being recorded. And so the impact of light tackle catch and release captains was actually much greater than anyone really understood. And it was an argument you get the point. But so MassDMF decided to actually measure this. They said, all right, let's conduct a survey and ask about the condition of how long was the fish played? How long was it out of the water? Where was it hooked? What was the hook configuration? And then what was the condition when you put it back in the water? Did it swim away? Did it have a lot of blood? Because one of the theories that many of us have had for many, 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 many years as well is, catch and release, there are many kinds of catch and release, right? If you're catch and releasing from a big J hook that has a chunk of bunker on it, and that bunker is ingested in the stomach of a fish, and you're pulling that thing out, and then you release it, that thing's dead on arrival, right? If you've got a fly in the lip and you're releasing it in 10 seconds, that thing is probably gonna swim away pretty clean. This was the first time anyone had done a study like this. So what happened is anglers, and it wasn't just in Massachusetts, all across the Eastern Seaboard, use the app. You see, this is mass.gov's website promoting the use of the Got One app to survey for this information. You can go, if you scan this QR code, you can go to, there's a live dashboard, and you can see in real time the results that they're getting from this. And I scrolled to this because it's so interesting. You can see right away the relationship between mortality and the type of tackle that's being used. And here, like the actual hook configuration. This is body hooks. This is internal hooking. Look at the amount of internal hooking on treble configurations on plugs. No one's ever had that data before. So this is now being published as a scientific peer-reviewed article this fall. But the data came in large part from the Got One app, and we were able to compress all of the timelines on this because of that. So what's really cool is Tony and ASGA get this information, and they say, gee, could we use that to drive gear changes fast, like now, in season? And so he called our good buddy, Mike Hogan from Hoagie Lures, one of the most innovative lure companies in the country. And with Cody and his colleagues created this thing called the Local Singles Program, trying to get people to replace treble hooks with singles. And what happened is if you go and watch...
Single and happy.
Yeah. And you know, we've actually had some debates about it because it actually turns out that the position of the hook is the bigger issue, is the biggest issue. So a single treble in the middle of a plug is actually like much better than trebles in any other configuration. Double singles or single singles, obviously optimal, but that's hard to get people to do. But even getting that single treble in the middle of the body of the lure has a huge impact on the vitality of released fish. And Hoagie Lures in season announced that they were changing all of their lures to this configuration and launched a whole marketing program around it. So it's an example of the speed with which data advocacy.
These lures, because the conservation community said if it's this easy to make a difference.
Yeah.
Mike sold out of his lures and he's waiting for it.
Yeah. And he was worried. He was very nervous about it before he did it, but it's been a big
deal. One other thing we added to it is if people had the desire to do so, they could take off their back treble and we allowed them to go into a participating retail location.
Yeah.
Which we started with a single shop and ended up being, we got calls from like L.L. Bean, which is a major player in Maine,
Bass Pro Shop.
Yeah, Bass Pro is in love with this.
Yeah. You could bring in your treble hooks from the back if you wanted to take them out of commission, and you got like a bunch of stickers and little fun stuff.
They gave you a split ring plier.
Split ring pliers to help you through the process, and then everyone's entered in, gave in at least 10 old rusty treble hooks, and we're going to take all of them, melt them all down in this giant statue.
Oh, that's quite, I know that.
Sculpture, and someone's going to win one that's basically, so when you look at like tangible impact, we can't say how many fish were saved, but we can say we took 1,537 back treble hooks out of this fall run this year.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Mike sold X amount of you know, science compliant. New lures out of the box.
Yeah, it's really, and it's fascinating. Like Mike would be a great case study because right after he committed to this, he called me and he was like, "Lou, I'm really nervous about this." He said, "I'm going to some of the smaller retailers and they're freaked out about this." And within like 3 weeks, he was like, "No, it was the best thing we ever did." He said, "We got more attention for Hoagie Lures than we've ever had before." And it started with a small retailer in Newport, Rhode Island, and it got picked up by Bass Pro. So
it's crazy too, because it's not just the fish. I mean, it's on a work trip, and this guy had hooked a duck, a treble hook. And so I'm with a bunch of folks from all over the states, and I'm probably the country's person there. And probably all, you know, Baltimore at the time. I'm sitting here trying to help this dude dig this treble hook out of this duck's wing.
Yeah.
You know, and the duck, I don't know if it lived or not, but, you know, those things are just, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
That's great.
The
guy, the worst thing you can do is if you catch a small fish on double
treble. Yeah.
Because that thing, you've got nothing to hold on to. And, you know, the whole time you're trying to get a hand on, six hooks swinging around. And it's more often fishing than that.
So we didn't just take a plier and cut two hooks off.
Yeah.
And he throws the duck back in the water and it's like, oh, the other hook will just rust out.
But, you know, see, this is the thing. Like, I think most of us who are experienced fishermen have known instinctively that troubles are a problem. But when you bring the data to the table, it becomes unassailable. And that's really the mission that we're after here is let's use data to help us, you know, to reinforce what we already know in many cases.
Driving that program, thanks to Gotwan, Lou's not going to brag. He's not that kind of a person. But when we first talked to Mass DMF, they were mailing out paper cards, a stopwatch, and a thermometer. And you were supposed to perform like basic, a high level science on each fish you caught. And when they told us how they were doing it, we kind of snickered a little bit. And we're like, no one on God's green earth is going to do this when you have an acre of breaking striped bass in front of you. You're going to go catch the next fish. It has to be easy. So then Lou, being a fisherman, developed voice activation for the app. You don't even have to take your phone out of the pocket. Blue develop the artificial intelligence to recognize the species. You don't even have to press a button to tell it it's a striper. It knows it's a striper. Then we got all of this, you know, what it's all of this is preliminary, and our striped bass people are already incorporating it, because right now we use 9% release mortality. 9% of the fish die that we return. But now that we have this data, we know that single artificial is 3%. We know fly is 3%. We know that a plug with just one hook, could be treble, could be single, is 3%. So we're coming back to the managers and saying, should you consider gear restrictions? Because if y'all are truly concerned in your heart with how many fish die on release, we can cut that from 9% to 3%. I mean, that's a 300% reduction,
yeah.
Right? It's a massive reduction just by choosing what you use to catch the fish, so.
So, well, it's been an incredible partnership. And again, this is, I want to emphasize, when we talk about small and large companies, this is me and one other guy and my AI partner in crime who doesn't even fish that I'm convincing to program for us. So, you know, we're really excited about what we can now do, having built this base. So just a few of the things we're doing now, right? So we now have in beta, I have it on my phone, the ability to identify, as Tony said, species from the photo itself. So we now have eliminated one of those two taps. You don't have to do the species. You can see here, our computer vision is able to take a typical angler photo of a fish. It's able to isolate just the fish. And then it's using machine learning algorithms that are publicly available now from huge databases of images of fish, and it's able to render automatically a species. One of the reasons we're so excited about this is that there are species like flounders where most even experienced anglers have trouble telling them apart, and there are very different management considerations for those fish because the stocks are in very different conditions. So one of the things we've been talking about with North Carolina, for instance, is
they have, it's the only state that has all three species, Gulf, Southern, and Summer Flounder, and some of the species are doing okay, some aren't, and they basically had no flounder season this year because people cannot tell them apart, and they catch them pretty much in the same spots, same everything, and loose product can do.
Yeah. So one of the things I'm really excited about is, you know, can we drive more participation in this sort of an app? Because it actually helps open fisheries rather than create more restriction, right? Again, I'm always thinking about what's the quid pro quo from the user for participation. The other thing we are doing, which I'm super excited about, we have a grant proposal with ASGA and Nature Conservancy and NOAA for a grant from ACCSP, which is a kind of the data warehouse, the federal data warehouse for recreational fish, is creating models that can train around automated length measurement, fork or total length. So you'll see what we've done is we're getting anglers to take pictures of the fish in a single plane, either on the beach or on the deck of a boat, with a ruler that has, this is an ASGA sticker, a Hoagie sticker, and a Got One sticker. And those are the sizes of those stickers. This is the size of a credit card, and this is the diameter of a golf ball. And what we're doing is, between the angler logging the length of the fish, are being able to verify that with the ruler and the view and the calibration devices, we can remove the ruler and the human from it. If you hold that sticker next to the fish, it will now measure the length. And if you don't have a Got One sticker, oh, by the way, if you want Got One stickers, you're over there. you can just hold a golf ball next to it, and it measures it. Or a credit card, right? So that's the next thing. So,
Lou, yeah. Tell the app not to do that, so it doesn't correct me.
There's a Cody exception to that. And then the next step, so species identification through AI, length identification, but the thing that I'm super excited about that we're collaborating with University of Chicago and the Marine Biological Lab at Woods Hole is, and this to me is like, if I can do this and I feel like I've done my life's work, is individual fish recognition. Actually being able to positively ID an individual fish. And so this is, hard to see here, but this is our computer vision model. So this is a picture of the same fish, but taken two different ways, right? Different rate, aspect, and rotation, and so on. What it's doing here is it's actually pulling out what we figured out from the folks at MBL, that they have certain human sort of parameters that they train people in to identify individual fish from stripe patterns and aberrations. So we've created a vision model that's able to isolate those features. And that's all it's looking at now here. And we're able, this is a unique pattern for a unique fish. And that pattern is persistent over years. And so what we're doing now is we're looking for partners like, so these guys, the reason they're such a great partner is they have a resident group, or this sort of like a visiting group of summer fish, same population, about 1,000 fish, comes into this one pond in Massachusetts. And every time they come in, over years, they've taken them out, a few of them out of the water every year, and they're photographing them, and they have positively ID'd them, but it takes them hours to do this work, and it's traumatic for the fish. They actually anesthetize them, they tag them, and so on. So, but they have that data, that photographic data, so we're using that to train the AI model. And then what we'll do is we'll test it on their population. So we're looking for other partners who have access to that, and then we're trying to establish a global protocol for how fish should be photographed and recorded in order to create a training database, an image database to train fish ID. And think about the applications of this. If we get this right, we could effectively replace the fairly medieval practice of putting physical tags in fish. Right?
So I mean, to put it into like normal fishermen terms, today, Lou catches a striped bass, he puts it in the app. The AI works at night when we're sleeping. It scans the fish. 5 years from now, I recapture that fish in the Chesapeake Bay when it's coming up to spawn. I don't know that Lou caught it, but I take the picture, and now it's in the app cloud database. While we're sleeping, the AI is crawling through it, and it goes ding, ding, ding. We have a match. So now we know 5 years apart, we know it's a Chesapeake Bay fish now that we caught in Montauk. We know it's not a Hudson fish. We have migrational patterns. We have growth rates because he got the size on the fish and I got the size on the fish. We have post-release mortality information. We know the fish survived. And with this, Lou just needs the images and the AI will do the work. So.
And I think
you know it's his fish, right?
That's right.
So the only way you would be able to know that you caught a fish that was already cataloged mm-hmm. by GodOne is if you had already adapted and had been using the GodOne app.
Correct.
Whereas with the, for lack of a better way of putting it, was with the traditional tagging, you could be completely alien to the tagging program and they don't always see it, but see the tag and then read the phone number on it and call it in.
Right.
So do you have some kind of creative solution for that problem?
I think, so number one is, I don't think this has to just be GodOne. So we will open source this technology, and we would like to see it built into every app out there, right? And this approach. And I think, again, it's the law of large numbers. I mean, if you think about, for anyone who's done a tagging, you know, expedition, it's expensive, it's time consuming, And so, If the simple act of taking the picture of the fish when you're logging it in GodOne or another app effectively adds a tag, you're 1,000, maybe 10,000 Xing your number of tagged fish out there. And so I think it will just yield much, much more positive results on the other end as well.
Agreed.
And, you know, we were talking about this earlier, you know, there really is also a generation. I think about what gives us why we love fishing so much, and you know, hearing in many cases older generations of anglers talk about how important it is to them to harvest fish, bring them home to the fish, or bring them to the fish camp and have a big, you know, cookout or whatever. You know, I don't want to make generalizations, but for instance, for my kids, they don't even eat fish. You know, that's not what makes them excited about it. But if they could pull out a fish and say, "Let me see on my app what the history of this fish is. Where has it been? Who caught it before? How big was it last season?" That is like, you know, they'll do that all day and all night long. So I think part of this also is, how do we address what makes fishing exciting to future generations of anglers like our kids, and not necessarily us too. So that's got one, and I'm happy to take any questions, but a quick overview of what we're up to right now.